previous 2 years of, at the two colleges as a result of power of use. So what we saw is increases of in the 100 to 200 student range in the number of students from low-income families and the number of students from that are considered English language learners and the number of students who are African-American and the number of students who are male. So those groups, which tend to be these days underrepresented in college, all had substantial increases as a result of the power of U. From the power of U student survey, we get a student perspective on the impact of the program. And from that survey, it showed that 30% of the students said they would not have enrolled in college without power of U. So 30% of the students responding to the survey. Another 50% of the students, or 51%, said power of U made it easier, but they probably would have enrolled in any case. And 19% said they definitely would not have enrolled without power of U. Turning to academic performance, our results suggest that many of the students were underprepared for college. Only 8% of college personnel that we interviewed felt power of U students were adequately prepared for college. Only 8%. And this is kind of evidenced by 75 to 81% of power of U students across the two colleges had to take developmental or remedial courses in their first year. And this was a higher percentage than their classmates in the fall of 2006 cohort. And this had an effect on the credits that they earned in that first year. On average, the Power of U students earned 19.6, or about 20 credits in their first year. And this compares favorably with their non-Power of U classmates, but many of them, these non-Power of U, were part-time students. And I should point out, in that average of 19.6 credits that they earned over the because they were taking developmental classes, the number of credits that they earned towards graduation was 12.1 credits on the average. So this suggests that these students are getting a slow start in terms of earning credits towards graduation, and they'll require at least 3 years to obtain the credits they'll need to get their Associate of Arts degree. Another point I would make about the credits earned is the prior cohorts, in particular the 2004 cohort and to some degree the 2005, tended to earn somewhat more credits. But this was really on the average. But this really occurred primarily at St. Paul College. And we think that may have something to do with the transition that was going on during this period at that college between a technical college and moving also to becoming a community college, because the number of credits that technical college students earn tends to be more than community college. So that might, in part, explain the higher number of credits on the average earned in the earlier cohort. Given the under preparation for college, it seems clear that the Power of U students would need support services for their retention and success in college so they are successful and avoid problems. The program appears to have had a substantial impact on retention. So the extra efforts that these two colleges made as part of Power of U related to retaining students once they're enrolled seem to have a significant impact because the retention rate, and this is the retention rate from the fall semester to the spring semester in the first year, was high relative to the other comparison groups that we had. So 85% of Power of U students were retained from fall to spring compared to only 64% of their classmates. And also it was higher than the previous cohorts, the retention rate, which tended to be around in the 60 to 70% range, where it was 85% for Power of U students. But it's challenging to determine the importance of specific support services given the scope of our evaluation or specific other types of support services. We rely primarily on students' reports of the value or helpfulness of those services and information available so far on what students receive in terms of services. Yet the need for services is confirmed through the surveys of the students as well as the college personnel. Now I'm going to turn to the performance of students in terms of their grades or grade point average GPA in the first year. And in the first year, the average GPA for Power of U students was 2.3, which is C plus on a 4-point system. This was the same as the non-Power of U classmates. They had the same average GPA, but it was somewhat lower than the previous cohorts. And we think that that's, and again, this was primarily due to a difference at St. Paul College. And we feel there that it really reflects the fact that those earlier cohorts were better prepared at St. Paul College. It's more striking there than at MCTC. And it's reflected in the proportions of students that take developmental classes, Power of U, and students and their classmates were taking much more than those previous two cohorts.
Mr. Mueller, you may not be the one to answer this question, but maybe when one of the presidents or one of the other speakers come up. But so if a Power of U student comes into starts college and needs remedial courses, how does the financial aid package work for that? Can the Pell Grant and the state grant and the Power of U dollars be used to pay for remedial courses?
I think the answer is, I'm not really the best one to answer that, but I think the answer is...
Maybe someone in the room when they come up could
answer.
Yes,
I understand that Power of U students are, you know, that's paid for through their financial aid package. I'm going to turn next to looking at the pattern in terms of academic performance over the fall semester and then spring semester. And we found there was a decrease in academic performance from the first term for Power of U students to the second term. So their grade point average was 2.5 in the fall term, and it was 2.0 in the second term. And the percentage of credits that they earned out of the credits attempted also dropped, so that ratio dropped somewhat from 73% to 60%. We think a likely explanation is that many of the fall courses were the developmental or remedial courses in the spring semester. The second semester, they move more into the courses that count towards the degree that which may have been more difficult. And finally, in terms of academics, we looked at the percentage of students in good academic standing at the end of the year, and we found that among Power of U students, 62% were in good academic standing at the end of the first year. This compared to 68% of their classmates, so it's slightly lower. And in previous cohorts, the number in good academic standing was slightly higher,
Madam Chair.
75 to 79.
Just a minute, Mr. Mueller. Senator Roebling.
What is good academic standing? What is the GPA for that?
Well,
Mr. Mueller.
Okay. It essentially, it means, well, what it means is the student is not on academic probation or suspended. And I think I'm not actually clear as to exactly what the criteria are for that.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Below 2.0, I think, yeah.
2.0?
So for one semester, first they get
this
put on
Ms.
probation.
This is Ms. Schultz.
Thank you. First they get put on probation, and then if they have two semesters, they get put on suspension. So here we're looking at the three categories would be good standing, probation, and suspension.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling, I think, was interested in what that meant in terms of their...
So it's more like a D average. Then there
well,
wouldn't be an average.
Well, it must be.
It could be a C minus, I think. Is that correct?
I think we were considering 2.3 we were considering in the C plus range. So if it was, they have to drop below 2.0 to go on to probation. So I think that would be more a C.
Could be a D or C minus.
C minus.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I don't think that 62% is really good then. I mean, I don't think that's very high percent. It's only a little better than half. I guess I would expect that if students are getting free tuition and maybe not working as much, that they could put more time into their schoolwork and do better.
Okay, good question for not the researchers, but for other people in the room. Okay, continue, Mr.
Again, I just wanted to mention with regard to that, the results differed by college, and compared to their classmates, PowerView students were less likely to be in good academic standing at MCTC, but more likely compared to their classmates to be in good academic standing at St. Paul College. So these results do vary somewhat by the college. And again, it's better in previous cohorts, somewhat higher in terms of those that are in good academic standing. And again, these results are probably related to the preparation for college differences between these cohorts, between PowerView and their classmates. In summary, results from after the first year suggest the following challenges. A major challenge is the level of preparation for college of students that participate in PowerView. And again, it brings in students who, significant numbers of students, it appears, who probably weren't intending to go to college and therefore probably weren't preparing as much as other students who were and planning to. And then secondly, with the result that students struggled to perform well academically in the first year and earn academic credits towards their degree. So so both the preparation for college and the struggling then, of course, when they get to college academically are major challenges that the program faces. Successes in the first year were the substantial boost in enrollment of students from underrepresented groups. So it boosted enrollment overall, you know, as I said, doubled the enrollment of these students, the Minneapolis and St. Paul Public High School graduates, doubled it and brought in underrepresented groups in large numbers, the low-income students from low-income families, African-American students, English language learner or ESL students, and male students. And secondly, another significant success was the high retention rate of program participants from the first semester to the second semester of the first year in college.
Do you have any information about retention from the first year to the second year now for this fall?
We don't have that information, but I understand that the colleges have some of that information at this point.
Any questions from members of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
You were talking about differences in preparation for the different institutions and the students who might be attending them. I'm curious, though, doesn't the PowerView require, isn't it sort of a merit-based scholarship? Don't students coming in, or is it anyone who graduates from a Minneapolis or St. Paul school is eligible for the scholarship, or is it?
You're correct.
Mr. Mueller.
Which one is it?
Just the any Minneapolis or St. Paul Public High School graduate who wants to enroll in the fall immediately following their graduation from high school is eligible.
So Madam Chair.
Yeah, Roebling.
So their GPA in high school has nothing to do with their getting the scholarship, just that they attended a St. Paul or Minneapolis school and graduated from it.
Mr. Mueller.
Correct.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
So, they're technically, you know, if we consider a high school diploma as something that is fairly equivalent, a lot of them should have the same skill sets that they would have learned in high school. And so I guess that, I mean, I understand there's a difference between GPAs, too, and how much people are retaining. But I'm wondering about the when you said there were differences in preparation. If they all have a high school diploma, the differences shouldn't be too significant, or is that not true?
Well, I'm basing that finding on differences in the need for taking remedial or developmental courses once they are accepted into college, and it was a higher percentage that needed to take those courses among the Power of You students than other students. That's what that finding is based on.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At page 4, in one of the handouts, it refers to 2/3 of the students having difficulty with courses would get help. For the 1/3 having difficulty, they have access to a mentor or a tutor, correct? And I assume they would know that. If not, what was the obstacle why students needing help would not seek it?
Did you get any of that in your interviews? Ms. Schultz.
Well, students are encouraged by the Power of You advisors when they are struggling to take advantage of the support services that are available. But it is also, to some extent, the responsibility of the student to then take advantage of those supports. And we did ask in terms of some of the obstacles for we asked both the college personnel their perspective for why students didn't seek out services if they needed them. We also asked the students for their perspective on challenges to seeking out services. The perspectives did vary. The college personnel tended to attribute that to motivation of students, maybe shyness in terms of seeking out services, a stigma attached to receiving services in terms of thinking that it's a sign of weakness, and or also the attitude that they'd prefer to solve their problems on their own. So those were some of the things that college personnel tended to point to. In terms of the students' responses, it was more just being busy, not having time to seek out services, and other types of constraints like that.
Well, Madam Chair, follow
up. Senator Wieger.
Is there a plan to address that? You know, there shouldn't be a stigma if one needs help. If you're drowning, you have to get help. If we're concerned about those, we congratulate everyone that's participating, but particularly those that are at risk and looking at failing. If they fail, not likely to return to the system, but if we have services available to help, tutors, mentors, and there's a stigma, there should not be any stigma attached. So I'm hoping there's an action plan that would tell people you're encouraged to get that help. The reward is that you hopefully will pass.
Senator Wieger, I don't know that the researchers know this. It does seem to me, though, that the director of the programs, I mean, it's not clear to me who's actually in charge of the Power of You. It appears there are, and maybe the presidents can help us with that, but it appears there are directors at maybe each of the campuses. And I don't know if the presidents who are going to testify next even know these kind of details. But we don't, you know, for whatever reason, we don't seem to have the program people on the agenda, but maybe they're in the room and could answer some of these questions when we're done with the researchers and the presidents, when we get into more specifics. Because there does seem to be, like, you know, students want to go to college. They say they're going to go to college, but they don't take the courses to prepare themselves to go to college or, you know, apply themselves to get good grades. And then this free program comes along, and they go to college, but they're not prepared. And so again, we have the remedial situation, and we have to work through that. And college courses are hard, and that's kind of a shock to a lot of students. So it's again one of our P20 issues, Senator Wieger, is how do we get these kids to kind of wake up? And maybe the students can help us with that, to kind of realize in high school that if you're going to go to college, you really need to apply yourself and take some rigorous courses and be better prepared, because otherwise we feel like should we be sending you to college? You know, you're not ready. And or do we just have a whole program where we set up a whole remedial year that is between high school and college? I don't know the answer to that, but I do feel like it's we're trying. I mean, that's why this is an experimental program, to try to figure out what's the best approach to get kids into and through college. More questions for the Wilder research team? Anyone? All right, thank you very much.
Senator Pappas, may I just ask the researchers
Senator
one
Sharon.
More question?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking back to something you said earlier about some differences in between the educational institutions. I don't think it was the number of credits, but it was maybe success, or there was a difference between the St. Mm-hmm. Paul College. And I wondered if you'd broke down a differential in terms of the group composition, the cohort composition. Was there anything within the cohorts that would explain those kinds of differentials between the campuses?
Mr. Mueller?
Well, part of those differences in the earlier cohorts to the Power of You cohort, and they seem to be more striking at St. Paul College, were, I think, partially related to the transition of the college from more of a technical college to including the community college as well as the technical part. And that, some technical programs, they earn more. They earn more credits than generally in the community college program, so that could influence the average credits earned, which was higher in that earlier cohort than in the later cohort. Could be somewhat related to that. And the other thing that was kind of striking in St. Paul College was the taking of remedial or developmental courses, which was considerably lower in the earlier cohorts than in the Power of You cohort, which suggested to me, again, that the level of preparation seemed to be different or differing from those earlier cohorts being more prepared than the later cohorts. One thing I just wanted to point out, too, is, you know, this was the first year of the program, and so students actually didn't learn about this opportunity until the winter or spring of their senior year in college. And so it appeared that some students who hadn't really been thinking that they were going to go to college decided to go to college because of this program. And I think, you know, that has implications for how well prepared they were. And, you know, the likelihood would be that some of those students would be less prepared because they weren't planning on going to college. Now, I think as the program has been more established, the word can get out, so students learn about this program earlier in their high school career than was true in the first year of the program.
And if
Ms. Schultz, just
if I could just add to that, you were asking also about the breakdown in the composition of the groups. One thing that we definitely saw at St. Paul College that was more striking, and actually it was not really the case at MCTC, was the proportion classified as low income. So the two previous years' cohorts at St. Paul College, it was 44% low income in 04, 46% low income in 05, and then in 06, the year Power of You entered, it was 67%, so significantly higher low income. So there are some differences in the composition of the groups that could also be associated with some of those differences that are appearing to be more striking at St. Paul College.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to figure out, if there was some phenomena that might be interesting for us to look at in terms of how you intervene. I was wondering if English as a second language, a composition of the group might have that particular additional
Mm-hmm. That's another one that grew.
It's another one that was different between the group, that if you can target what those are, it helps give a context and also helps give us a sense of direction. And I appreciate talking about reminding us that this was just a new program, so this may change in the future should it continue, you know, to let the students who know the program is there earlier to begin to be engaged in more preparation. Mm-hmm. But and then one more follow-up, now, just to make sure I'm clear, does the program do anything more than, well, I guess I'll wait for the programmatic presentations and save my question for later. Not ask the researchers.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
I'm sure. I'm wondering if the researchers have any recommendations, really. Well, I do see they have some. Because one of the things I think is a challenge is inadequate preparation for college. And, you know, it's something that the ACHIEVE program was trying to get at by that program doesn't give free money to anyone who decides to go to college, but it gave money to students who were taking rigorous courses in high school that would go into a scholarship fund for them for college. And so, you know, an incentive for students to start out in high school becoming better prepared for college and then having resources to take with them to a higher ed institution later on. And I'm just wondering if that is something that you think would work for a program like this, that we should be bringing this down into the high schools and saying, okay, you can earn a free college opportunity, but this is what you have to do in high school. Mm-hmm. What do you think the reaction to that would be?
Mr. Mueller or Ms. Schultz?
Well, one of our recommendations speaks to the notion of establishing stronger relationships with the high schools and as part of that, reaching students earlier in their high school careers with this kind of, increasing their awareness of this kind of opportunity earlier and potentially working with the high schools to better prepare students for college.
Could you just walk us through your program recommendations?
Okay. Yeah, that's the one I just talked about was the first one, to strengthen the relationship with high schools. So to get students thinking about college earlier and to work with high school staff to improve underrepresented students' preparation for college. And then our second recommendation was balancing pre-enrollment and post-enrollment services because we found from both our surveys with students as well as college personnel that there seemed to be more services received in the pre-enrollment stage in terms of overcoming obstacles at that point, but fewer services available for students, or at least taken advantage of so students could overcome obstacles after they enrolled. So that was another recommendation. And then one of the things we saw was that students had a number of students, and it wasn't one of the highest things that students identified as an obstacle was personal issues, but in terms of them getting assistance or help with that, that was pretty low relative to them getting assistance with, I think, academic help or academic needs. And so we recommended that more attention be paid to getting students the help they need around personal issues. Fourth one was considering assisting students with finding ways to cover their living expenses while in college. So to figure out ways that living expenses might be covered or barriers might be overcome in that area, that was something that the college staff talked about as well as the students in the surveys. Things like child care or transportation or paying for books, those kind of things seem to be, again, creating some obstacles for some of the students. So we were wondering if more could be done in that area to try to address those things. And then improving the service learning component of the program. We found that about half of them were participating in service learning in the first year. And it appeared that from the college personnel, too, that they weren't many of them weren't satisfied with the program and were really feeling that it needed to be linked more closely with students' coursework. And so we offered a recommendation there to improve the service learning component. And I think my understanding is there is efforts this current year to do a stronger linkage to the coursework of the students.
Yeah, we would be interested in hearing from the other testifiers about what you're doing in terms of these recommendations in the second year.
Okay, and then our next recommendation was to further develop the community partnership supporting the program. While there were certainly a number of partnerships developed, it appeared that there was more work that could be done there, both in terms of helping to support the service learning aspect of the program, as well as nurturing relationships that would be helpful in recruiting students to enroll in the Power of You. And then finally, enhance the collaboration between MCTC and St. Paul College. We felt that the greater collaboration between colleges, and now, of course, there's a third college involved, so that would probably apply there, too. If there's greater communication and collaboration, we felt, between the colleges in terms of their implementing this program, we felt that could improve the overall strength of the program. So those were our first year recommendations.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Roebling.
When you were doing your work, did you do surveys like how many of the students enrolled are currently working, how many live at home with their families? Was any of that included so we get kind of a demographics view?
You have some of that, yes.
Yeah. It's in the full report?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it, I think we have it, or it's available to be downloaded?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe from what I've heard that the executive summary was shared.
Yeah, we did
you.
Have that.
I don't
that.
Know if you have the full report, but it is available on our website and I believe on the college's websites as well.
Yeah, we do have it. I just didn't know if we had it here today, but we did have some stuff here, so. Okay, let's move on then. Thank you very much. Thank you for your work.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's bring up the two college presidents, President Schwichtenberg and President Davis. You know, I have to say that something that we have, first of all, personally, I'm very supportive of what we're trying to accomplish here. We just want to make sure that that we are down, we're going down the right corridor, and that we see what the problems are as we try this experiment. And it's a little difficult for us also to think of funding a 5-year pilot that's only completed a year and a half of the pilot. So it's maybe important to talk about that. And also, we've never seen any kind of financial information at all, a budget. There's just kind of a lot of questions about how the programs run, who's in charge, things like that. And also with the bill, what the proposal would be for the bill. Like, I don't know if you have counselors who go into schools or you have counselors on campus. So I think we have a lot of questions that are maybe the level of specificity that isn't for the college presidents. But please proceed.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Phil Davis, the president of Minneapolis Community and Technical College.
And Donovan Switzenberg, president of St. Paul College.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you for having us. And as you can see, we have great enthusiasm among our students, faculty, and staff, many of whom are here today. In fact, Madam Chair, one of our students has prepared a notebook, and she's asked me to leave that with you for your review.
Great.
Madam Chair, committee members, you're asking some wonderful questions. And if I can, just provide a little context. Remember when we were here last, we talked about the problem. And the problem that was articulated quite well by the Citizens League in its 2004 report and later by the Itasca Project in its report that showed extraordinary disparities among students of people of color in Minnesota, particularly with respect to higher education, and predicted that only 3% of African-American and American Indian students and 5% of Latino students who were in the ninth grade in 2004 would, by the time they're 25, finish a bachelor's degree. The National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education estimates that $1.4 billion is lost in the Minnesota economy because of this disparity. So our three institutions, we're looking at trying to solve that kind of problem, or at least have an impact on it. And our approach was, as we looked at the number of students of color enrolled in Minneapolis and St. Paul public schools, something in excess of 70%, and knowing that only about half of those who even graduated from high school were going on to post-secondary education in Minnesota, we felt that as though something needed to change. Current programs of financial support were not inspiring people to either prepare for, be well prepared for college, or to go to college, even if they graduated from high school. So this program was developed in a very rapid response to that specific problem. We agreed to create a 5-year demonstration project with private money. And as you know, we've raised about $4 million from corporations, from family foundations, from individuals to try to find out whether this will work. You've just heard from the Wilder Foundation, which has done a wonderful interim report on the first year of the program. Now, bear in mind that in the first year, as they've indicated, this program, this hope of the ability to go to college, the removal of real or perceived financial barriers, inspired 357 students to go to college. 270 of them are students of color. Now, we doubled the number of students going immediately from high school on to college. The vast majority, as you heard from Wilder, are low-income students and students of color. 30% of them, as high school seniors, had not made the decision to go to college, which one could assume meant that they hadn't necessarily taken the courses that would prepare them well for college. Now, this isn't new to the power of you. Our two-year institutions all across Minnesota find, as we do assessment testing of students who are interested in coming, they need remedial work, and we do provide some of that because we think it's a good investment in their success. And they often need very little remedial work in order to be successful. This program, for example, provides essentially 12 credits of remedial work. We've allowed students to get the first 2 years of college tuition-free, which means not 60 credits, but 72, anticipating that some remedial work would be needed. And no surprise to us, remedial work was indeed needed. What's the alternative? The alternative is students won't go to college. Where will they get prepared for college? Well, we're the place. So we'd rather have them going to college, getting developmental education, getting the support services that lead to their success. But, of course, in a first year of a program done this swiftly, there are going to be opportunities for improvement. And we're pleased to have the report from the Wilder Foundation as a guide for that.
President Davis, is that $4 million intended to be over the 5 years, or is that
No, the total raised? Project estimate, Madam Chair, is $6.5 million.
Okay.
Now, bear in mind, of course, that the Senate File 3490 does not ask for any support for the reach-back component, that is, the reaching back to families well before high school, grade school, middle school, to help give them the expectation that college is essential. But as or more importantly, for many of the students and their families, the belief that college is financially possible. Now, you might say, well, we already have the Pell Grant, which most of these students qualify for, that would support them through college, and the state grant program, a wonderful program. Why is more needed? We think this program showed very strong evidence that people, even people who do qualify for a full Pell Grant, do not believe that they can afford to go to college.
So, President Davis, how much of the money you raised is actually necessary to supplement what the Pell Grant and the state grant? How much per student do you need to cover tuition? And then how much is going into kind of support services both in the high schools? And are you also paying for support services on campus, or is that the usual counselors that you have on campus that are available for all your students?
Madam Chair, good questions. On average, in the first year of the program, we provided approximately $1,100 to the scholarship component of the Power of You. And about $850, that's per student. And about $850 per student, and it varied a bit between MCTC and St. Paul College, but on average, about $850 per student to provide the additional support services. And yes, indeed, we have added additional staff, PowerView staff, to serve these specific students in the program.
So the $1,000, that's for the whole year. So it's
that's
like $500
year,
a semester.
Yes.
And is the staff also working in the high schools? as well?
Yes, Madam Chair. Both St. Paul College, Metropolitan State University, and MCTC have strong relationships with the school districts and with individual institutions. We have trio staff who are in the high schools. This program, as we talked about last time, however, looks to beyond just the schools as a means for support. YMCAs of St. Paul and Minneapolis are part of this program. African-American Family Services, Hospitality House, faith-based organizations, all are participating in reaching back to families and children to make sure they understand that college is possible. And I think many of the questions that senators have today are very good questions. We want students to come to us academically prepared to take college-level courses without developmental ed. We've wanted that for a long time. We want them to think early about preparation in high school and grade school, middle school, for college. That's very important. And that's why we're working very closely with the districts. Now, I should point out that because of the power of you and because of our findings in the first year, we've launched a new program in Minneapolis called Jumpstart to College. We've focused specifically on English language learners so that students who take our assessment tests in the 11th grade at their high school and who identify as in need of some additional remediation would not wait till they come to college, but rather use the summer before and the year of their 12th grade to get prepared so that when they do come to MCTC or St. Paul College or Metropolitan State, that they're fully prepared to participate in college-level work. We're going to expand that program next year to native-speaking students as well. And I think this is just one example of our efforts to try and act on what we've learned from the power of you.
President Davis and President Schwichtenberg, last year, this division appropriated $22 million to MinSCU specifically to serve the underserved. How much money did your campuses get out of that pot, and how does that interact with dollars that you raised for the Power of You?
Madam Chair, for MCTC, we received just under $400,000 per year from that program, and we're using most of that money to provide the support services to the Power of You that we've talked about, staff, support services in tutoring, in resources, helping students with the personal side. The question was asked, what are we doing to respond to the recommendations? Personal support was important. One of the things we're adding at MCTC is a resource person who can help students with housing, childcare, transportation, and other personal issues that might interfere with their ability to continue in college.
So that's for the Power of You students, but that money is also used to serve other students who qualify. Well,
of course, Madam Chair. For example, the resource person would serve all students, including Power of You students.
And then is that duplicative with what the private money that you've raised to serve students in the Power of You?
Madam Chair, no. This will supplement the private money, which, of course, our funders have been very, very generous, but they've been also very clear with us. And that is if the program works, and I think they believe it is working, that they would expect that their contributions would just demonstrate to policymakers that this is a good public investment for Minnesota. We don't expect it will continue after the 5 years.
Madam Chair.
President Schwichtenberg, welcome.
St. Paul College received about $200,000 of the funds that you're speaking of. We also received another special grant from the MinSCU system for transitions to the Power of You of $75,000. We also received two other grants from other places in order to supplement some of the monies that we received to support the Power of You. We use some of the funds for support services. One of the questions was, have we made any changes after the first year? One of the things that we are doing, we have a system that all teachers can report students who are having difficulty to a central location. And from there, they're giving extra services. If they're Power of You students, we have a retention coordinator specifically to work with Power of You students to assist them in maintaining their grades or whatever other problems they have, help with tutoring, referral to tutoring, that type of a thing, in order to try to support them to have them more opportunity to be able to be successful at college.
Madam Chair, we have three students who would love to testify. I would just to answer a few of the technical questions that were asked earlier. I know Senator Roebling's not here, but 2.0 GPA is required for satisfactory academic progress, so that is the level of minimum level of academic expectation. And yes, we will evaluate the program for the entire 5 years. I believe we only have a 2-year contract with the Wilder Foundation. If I can, lastly, we do...
President Davis.
Madam Chair, you you asked about leadership. We have three wonderful leaders for the Power of Your program on campus. Kathleen Gordon at St. Paul College, mm-hmm. Christina Ramos at Metropolitan State University, and Nasreen Mohammed at MCTC. They're all here today. And, of course, we'd be glad to answer any technical questions you have about the program at any time, including providing you with a detailed budget.
Right. Sure. If we do have time, I was interested in hearing about the Metro State program that just started this fall, because I guess I had a misunderstanding about the program. I thought that St. Paul College and MCTC would be a feeder to Metro State, and students would start at Metro State as juniors. And that, I don't know, somehow I had that misunderstanding. So I was just curious how it's going with the freshman class in a, you know, a kind of a four-year institution, given the high rates of remedial that we've seen necessary for students at your colleges.
Madam Chair, I know there are people here from Metropolitan State, including Interim Vice President Ed Malachy, who's here representing Dr. Lowe. Okay. I'm sure they'd be glad to answer those questions. They did admit a class of 26 freshman students this year into the Power of U.
Okay.
Madam Chair, also
President Schwichtenberg.
The concept of the program is to encourage students to start at Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then encourage those who want to go on for a four-year degree to go on to Metro State, and there's monies in the plan available to help support them for their effort.
Oh, so that is part of the plan.
It is part
of
the plan.
Oh, so I wasn't totally wrong.
No, you were not.
Okay.
You are never wrong, Senator Babbitt.
No, sometimes I do make mistakes, as we all know.
No. I'd like, if I ask,
correct them as soon as I can.
Thank you. I'd like to be able to make some comments as the last speaker today, if I could. But we have some students here.
Uh-huh.
Would you allow me to call them up? And
have the students, and then you want to come back?
Yes, please.
I just wanted to ask you a question about the researcher, Mr. Mueller, mentioned about St. Paul College becoming a full community college and the technical college and all that. And I thought that happened quite a while ago.
Chair Pappas, I'm not sure of what parts he was referring to. We have changed over from a technical college to a community technical college. He may have been referring to some students who were maybe in technical programs versus in more community ed programs. I'm not sure what he was referring to.
But when did you make that transition?
About 5 years ago.
5 years ago. I thought it was a while ago. So I don't know why that would have had an impact on whatever he was talking about. Did Jennifer Schultz, is she still here? Oh, okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure maybe you could clarify that in a little while. Okay. All right. Please bring up the students.
Thank you. We have three students that are with us today. I'd like to ask them to come forward this time. Harrison Jones, Jasmine McConnell, and Delissa Timms, if they could join me at the table, please.
Welcome to the Capitol and to the Senate and to the committee.
Thank you.
Do you want to just introduce yourselves again before you give your statement?
My name is Delissa Timms. I am a first-year student of the Power of U.
My name is Harrison Jones. I'm a second-year student of the Power of U.
Okay.
Madam Chair, my name is Jasmine McConnell, and I'm a second-year student at the MCTC Power of U.
Okay.
Speak first.
How's it going?
Well, I graduated from Central High School, and during that time, I was going through a lot of struggles with keeping my grades up and stuff because with my family life, like, I come from a single-parent home, and so my mother was the only, like, adult that was around, and so basically I had to take on other responsibilities, like take care of my brothers and sisters. There's four of us living with her, so I take on that responsibility. My mother had meningitis for a long time. She was in the hospital. And then my youngest sister, when she was born, she was very premature. She was born at 1 pound and 5 ounces, so she had to stay in NICU care for about 3 months. And that interfered with my grades.
So your siblings are quite a bit younger than you.
Yes. I'm the oldest in my household, mm-hmm. so...
And how old are your siblings?
There's 14, there's 9, and there's 7. So, yeah. Also, like, the pressure of me being the oldest is why I wanted to go to college, because everybody was looking at me. Like, my mother, she went to college but didn't finish. My dad went to college but didn't finish. And I wanted to be the first one in my family to go to college and finish. And so I have the younger siblings looking at me, and my brother's going to school right now, and he's in ninth grade, and I keep telling him, you know, you got to go to college, because, you know, it's going to perfect you to be a better person. Also, during that time, financially, I was like, how am I going to pay for that? You know, I don't have a good enough job. At the time, I was working at McDonald's and stuff, and I didn't really have a good enough job to do that. And my intention was, since I was always, you know, like in school, my grades weren't that good. So in school, I always had this perception like, well, only the smart people can go to college. And that was the problem with me. How, like, how can I finance? I come from a low-income family. How would I even get the chance to go to college? That was the problem. And the solution was the Power of You, because it inspired me. People came from Metropolitan State and came and talked to the seniors about the program. And to me, that was like a way for me to go to college. I'm like thinking like, wow, there's an answer. There's somebody who, you know, is making a way for me to go. And so the Power of You is good for students. It really is a good thing for students. It gives them a chance to, you know, just to go to college, to, you know, see that, you know, there is a way for you to get through all the barriers and the obstacles. It helps with financing. It challenges them to get their grades C or better. It makes them leaders of the community. We do, every semester, we do have to, it's required that we have to volunteer at least a minimum of 10 hours in our community. And they stay with you. They help you tutor. If you're having trouble in your classes, they're there to talk to you. I love the Power of You because it's a family environment. To me, I know most of everybody that's in it. We go on field trips. We have meetings like once a month. They involve you in the school. There's student success days where businesses come and like talk to you, and you can do on-site interviews, and there's different companies that'll help you. We have career fairs. We also have karaoke days. Like, people can get up and sing, but I don't know if you guys want to come to that. right now, I'm also involved in the student ambassador program because they inspired me to be a big part of my college and be a leader. How it makes changes? Well, it changes the negative side, that you don't have to be smart to go to college, that ordinary people can go to college. And they don't say no. They don't say no to you. They don't close doors on you. They actually give you, they welcome you to college. And right now, I am getting my associate's degree. I mean, on my way of getting my associate's degree. I plan on transferring to Hamline or Concordia. I have all B's in all my classes. I want to major in business, entrepreneurship, and minor in marketing. And thanks to the Power of You, I've had a great college experience. And they helped me discover that even ordinary people can be leaders. Yeah. So,
thank you, Ms. Kim. Since the Power of You just covers your tuition, how are you handling your books and your other living expenses?
By working. I also, oh, there was a question that when I was listening to you guys talk about the action plan for people not wanting the services or something on there. That is true. Your life can't get in the way because I no longer live with my mother. I have my own apartment. I'm working two jobs. And the thing for you to be in the Power of You requires you to be a full-time student. You have to be full-time. So me working two jobs and trying to pay rent and going to school full time, I think I'm doing pretty good having all B's in all my classes.
Absolutely. You're doing great.
Thank you, Madam.
Okay, next.
Hey. All right, my name is Harrison Jones, like I stated earlier. I am, like most other people in the program, I came from a very low-income family. And I was the youngest in my family, so going to college was really important to my family. And both of my parents, they tried to go to college, but my mother was, she became pregnant with my oldest brother, so she wasn't able to go. And my father tried to go, but for whatever reason, he hasn't told me to this day. He also dropped out as well.
Are you in your first year, Mr. Jones, or your second year?
Second year.
Okay. Yep.
And also my brother and sister, they both they attempted to go, but due to financial issues, my sister also had to drop out. And my brother, I believe he went to the military, so he decided not to go as well. So everybody looked to me, you know, the youngest. And during that time, you know, growing up, I didn't really understand what it was to go to college or how important it was for to make a way for myself or to get an education for myself. So during that time, it was just like, okay, sure, you know, I'll go to college if that's what you want, that's fine. But as I got older, the family, my family, they all separated, and my parents got a divorce. My brother went off to the military. My sister was MIA, so to speak. I didn't hear from her for a long time. So entering high school, it was, and I didn't even stay with my parents. I moved away from my mother's house, and I lived with my aunt starting my freshman year in high school. So I pretty much was on my own. I had to make my own way. I didn't have anybody to help me or support me to get through high school. And when it came to my senior year in high school, I had an opportunity to pick colleges, and I picked three different colleges, the U of M, Concordia, and Hamline, and I was accepted into all three of them, but I didn't attend any of them because I didn't have any funding, and there's nobody to help me. They talked to me about financial aid and scholarships and all that, but during that time, I had so little knowledge of it that it really, it didn't make an impact on me. It didn't encourage me to continue to try to go to college until a little bit prior to graduation, I heard about the Bauer Review program.
Mr. Jones, what kind of grades were you getting in high school then?
I had A's and B's. I graduated with a 3.0.
Okay.
And so when I first entered the Bauer Review program, I was like some people were mentioning before earlier, I was very unprepared for college. I mean, college is a huge transition from high school. You know, you can't slack as much as you did in high school. There's not a lot of it's true. You can't slack as much as you did in high school. I mean, you're more independent. You're more getting to school from school, managing your work schedule and your personal life. I mean, all that is more on to you now instead of relying on other people or public transportation. And I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself that I would continue to do well while being in this program. But like Delisa said earlier, the Power Review, I mean, it's a family. I mean, everybody that you see in this room, we're all family. They're, you know, people like Delisa or other people that are sitting in there, they help me to stay self-motivated, to understand that it's okay, that I can do it. You know, I'm, like she said, I might not be the smartest person, but a college education is possible. And
Mr. Jones,
yes.
When you were accepted at the U, did they tell you that they have a similar thing to the Power of U called the Founder Scholarship?
No,
right,
they did
not. Where you could get all of your tuition paid for at the university.
I was not informed of that. I wasn't informed of that until I got into the Power of U.
Right.
But
so that's still a possibility for you for your junior year.
Actually, that is a possibility. Yes. And back to what I was saying, but I didn't have the support that I needed, but I got it from this Power View family and people like Jessica Rowe and Kathleen Gordon. They were with me every single step of the way, letting me know that it was okay. They helped me with my classes. They helped me plan my social life. They helped me do everything it is that I needed to make sure that
they tell you what movies to go to. And
I told them that.
You tell them that. Oh, I see. Your friends tell you that.
but just to make it short, I think one thing that people don't really look at is that the Power of You program is not just a program for students to get free tuition or to go to school. It's an opportunity for students who may not believe that they can go to college or that they can't, you know, do something with their life. It's an opportunity that they can take versus taking another opportunity such as staying in the streets or doing something that's not so productive with their life. This is something that they can take. And for people who want to be an electrician or a nurse or whatever, I mean, if they don't see that possibility or that opportunity outside of the school or within their family, they can see that within this program. And one thing that I do want to say that because of this program, I'm graduating from St. Paul College.
Yay.
And on May 16th. And not only that, but I'm also transferring back to the U of M, which is one of my original decisions to go to because of this program. And even within this program, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure everybody in this room knows that college is not easy. I mean, she said she's working two jobs. I'm working three jobs. And I'm taking the bus. I don't even have a car. I mean, it's not easy, but it is an opportunity. It is something that people can take advantage of. So,
Mr. Jones, have you taken out any college loans?
No, I have not.
I have.
No, you have.
I have received Power of You pay for my tuition, and I have a Page scholarship that pays for my books.
Okay. Next, Ms. McConnell.
Madam Chair, my name is Jasmine McConnell. I'm going to start out with the introduction of myself. I'm going to do a speech, and then I wanted to talk about some of the concerns you guys had and some of the questions. First off, I live on the north side. I've been living there since I was four. My mother, she attended school, and my father attended school. They both graduated from college. So that's not part of why I didn't go to a four-year. I can't even tell you how many schools I applied for, and a lot of schools didn't accept me. The reason why, because of my grades in high school. My average was about a C or 2.0. Now I'm on a dean's list, 13%, the top 13%. I got all A's in my class. So because you're in high school and the things that you've done in high school does not reflect how you are now or
your abilities.
You know, exactly, your abilities. I don't know exactly what else I need to say about myself, but my name is Jasmine and I'm in college. So I'm just going to...
Did you intend when you were in high school that you would go to college?
No, I didn't want to go to college, actually. And the reason why I didn't want to go to college, because so many colleges didn't accept me. I felt like it was not important for me to go to college if any schools was not even interested in me. But now that the Power of You, they came to my high school, the Power of You came to my high school, and as soon as there was an opportunity for me to go to school tuition free, then why not take the opportunity? So that's exactly what I did. I wrote a speech for you guys.
Ooh, I thought that was it.
We understand the concerns of the underfunded economic situations and budget cuts, but we all know it just isn't right to put a price on education. Yes, it's time to be proactive and not reactive to the health of this state. I'm not here as a student today, but a taxpayer and citizen who is concerned with the future of this community and the state of education for all. So at least be considerate to making a difference in a decision for our community. Make a change. Let's look at facts personally. I wouldn't be able to focus on school to the extent that I've been on the top 13% dean's list if it wasn't for the Power of You scholarship. I wouldn't even be going to school because of financial reason if it wasn't for the Power of You scholarship. I wouldn't be graduating this semester with a major in carpentry, nor going back for another degree if it wasn't for the Power of You scholarship. In addition, I wouldn't even be here speaking to you all right now on behalf of MCTC students if it wasn't for the Power of You scholarship. So show some compassion for the livelihood of future students, at least, in these programs, because these programs provide hope, provide the opportunity, provide the choices. Contribute to the cause
like we have by showing our presence here. Be someone who made this community something, not nothing. Provide the hope. Thank you.
Thank you for your eloquence.
No problem. I just wanted to end it with some of the concerns that you guys had. At MCTC, we have an academic, it's called Leadership Academy, and it is for Power of Youth students. So if you're there, it's a group where we can come as a common space to be together and relate to each other and share with some of the concerns we have while we're in college. We also have advisors around. Some of them are here who are very, very supportive. Don't get me wrong, they're very, very supportive. And personally, financially, I'm not going to say spiritually, but education-wise also. And then about the 1/3% who are not looking for help, some of the reasons why is because we don't really need help. I feel like it's not about being too strong or you thinking that, you know, you have it all. It's just that some people grow a little different. It's environment, and it is also the way you were brought up to, the way you learn in the school system. So the way I was taught and at home had to do with a lot of reasons why I didn't feel like I needed too much help.
Well, you're on the dean's list, or you're getting a 3.0 GPA, you know, academically, you don't need help, right?
Right. So I feel like that shouldn't be too much of a concern. I don't know. I feel like this is a very good program. This program will help a lot of students, not just students that's in here, but us as students, we tell other students. So it's kind of like a rolling effect where we're telling students and students are getting motivated. People are actually thinking about going to school. You know, we have younger siblings, and we can tell them before they're even in high school about this program or even just the opportunity of going to school and enhancing themselves and encouraging them.
You're such great ambassadors. Do you ever go back to your high school and talk to the high school students?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every month I go back to North High.
Oh, Ms. McConnell.
I go back, and because it's important to give back to your community. Yeah. Any kind of way you do it is special. But it's just not about high school. It's about going to other high schools, not just my high school, but mm-hmm. going to other. And that's what I'm interested in, is going into other middle schools, not just high schools, just middle schools. It's what's important is to start out very young and talk to people right. very, very young about education. Thank
Ms.
you.
Timms.
I just wanted to also say that this program, like she said, now that I have experienced what I've experienced, I can go share my experiences with other people and, you know, help them get into schools. Younger kids, help them know that there is a dream and that, you know, if you look around, we are the leaders we are the new leaders. There might be another president in here, another doctor, senator. So, like she said, we need to reach out and help those and do what we need to do for the community because we are the new leaders.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee for the students? Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being so candid and about your futures. Do you have a career in mind, each of you?
Career in mind?
If you'd like to share it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, after college.
I want to start my own business. I love working with youth, and I love doing theater, and I don't know how to put theater into business, so I kind of want to do marketing. But
Did you do theater with Jan Mandel?
No. Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did.
In high school?
Jan Mandel, yes.
Yes?
Yes, yes.
Yes. My daughters did, too.
reunion? No, I'm just kidding. But I want to start my own business for youth kids.
And Mr. Jones?
Currently, at St. Paul College, I'm doing sign language. And after I get my certificate for that, I'm transferring to the U of M to do youth studies. So my plan is to work with both deaf and hearing kids in a variety of settings.
Okay. And Ms. McConnell? You're going to be a carpenter.
Yes, I'm graduating with a degree in carpentry, but I'm going to be going back to get a business degree, and then I'm going to go back again and get a degree in African American studies. Mm. My plan is to get those degrees first, but right now I'm working with a nonprofit that is doing something that I'm very, very interested in doing myself. That is provide a nonprofit that helps Northside and Southside and St. Paul residents get homes for low income and financially
and fix them
disabled.
Up.
Yes. So I'm interested in fixing up, remodeling, reconstructing, and building new homes for the community, basically. Okay. And then I just want to educate myself, so that's why I'm getting the African American Studies mm-hmm. degree.
Okay, President Schwichtenberg, you wanted to wrap up. Oh, just a minute. Senator Shearn.
I have a question. I've been struggling to figure out how to ask this in a way that you'll be able to answer the question. So I'm just going to struggle with it and hope that that maybe you'll be able to help me with it. Because when I was listening to you, and I'm thinking about what are the barriers that we need to provide assistance with to help people get to college and then be successful when you get there. And finances clearly is one. So if I set that aside and if I were going to ask you what was the biggest barrier to your getting to college, maybe you'd all say finances. So I want to set that aside for a second and then ask you again, aside from that, can you tell me, is there something that you can tell me to help me understand why you're not thinking about going to college other than finances? And the reason I'm asking you that is because I heard a couple of you say something that about something inside your mind that tells you that you're not smart enough to do that, or that you don't have, that you have to be smart to go to college, or and discovering you don't have to be smart to go to college, or something like that.
But self-esteem issue.
Yeah. The point, yeah. I would like to hear what their perspective is about that, because obviously that's not true about you. But is that integrated in your thinking somehow so that it stops you from believing not only financially but in other reasons that would stop you from doing more that you might want to do?
And I'm going to have to ask you to be kind of brief with your answers. Maybe think of, other than finances, what was the most important barrier that you saw that would prevent you from going to college? Ms. Timms.
In high schools, the encouragement from the teachers. They don't, not all of them encourage their students like they should.
Okay. Mr. Jones.
I think there's a lack of motivation from families and homes, where they don't get enough support from parents or siblings mm-hmm. That they can do it or they can make it in college.
Okay. And Ms. McConnell?
I would say that ignorance is bliss. And I say that because a lot of people don't know exactly what you're getting yourself into. So you're a little afraid to get into something that you have no clue
fear of
what
the unknown.
It is. Exactly. So you look at different things of, well, I'm just going to say I can't do this. I can't do this. So
I just need to pursue that, because Ms. McConnell, you said that both your parents went to college.
Yeah.
So that should have been much more of a known situation, and it wasn't.
No. They didn't ever, ever tell me about college.
Oh.
That's the thing.
Okay. Okay. All right, and then President Schwichtenberg, you wanted to wrap up?
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your excellent testimony.
Mr. Chair Pappas, we did have some other speakers here today to mm-hmm. talk about the power of you, but I'm not sure if your timelines would allow, if you want me to wrap
we
up.
We had,
you want to take a few minutes.
Well, if they all wanted to, we had on the agenda, we had Rita Fletcher and John right. Temke and Mike Favor and Bev Turner.
Yes, could I invite?
Do you have anyone else?
No, that's about it. Redis and I'd like to invite Redis and John Temke up this time.
Come together, okay?
Sure. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Senator, you want me to? I'll go ahead and start.
Okay. Just introduce yourself, please.
How do you do?
Tape.
I'm Rita Fletcher.
I'm a lifelong resident of the city of St. Paul. Actually, I'm second, almost third generation. I just wanted to convey some comments, both as first as being a lifelong resident and just an observation, but more importantly, I'm also an economic development director for the city of St. Paul. I'm also on the St. Paul College Advisory Board, and I'm also on the Chancellor's Community Action Diversity Council, and that's an activity that's more directed at getting more diversity through preparation and access efforts. Finally, I'm a member of something called the Minnesota Minority Supplier Diversity Council, and what that is, it's a vehicle that was created by the Fortune 500 corporations here that are based in St. Paul, and it relates to supporting diversity in the supplier chains of the 3Ms, the Cargills, and the Carlson corporations of the world. That's kind of my background. What I wanted to convey first is the importance of engaging this diverse population that we have in our public school system. This is our workforce of the future. From an economic development perspective, I'm primarily with brick and mortar, but the true economic development tool that's connected to the health of our city and into our region is really our workforce preparation. It's our workforce. It's not just the brick and mortars, nor is it just the TIF stuff that we make available to employers. It's not the assistance. It's actually what the composition of our workforce is and how skilled it is to get to our employer needs. That's reflected in terms of what we do at the city of St. Paul, but it's also reflected in the Fortune 500 corporations that do employ, small businesses that do employ our residents of the city. What we have in our St. Paul school system is their pool of people. We have to figure out a way to fully engage all of the people in our school systems. 40 years ago, to give you an example of some changes that have occurred, 40 years ago, I graduated from St. Paul Central. When I graduated from St. Paul Central, minorities and low-income people, we were in the minority. If you look at the composition of our public school systems now in our Twin Cities, people of color are the majority. They're going to be a big factor in our workforce and in our workforce in the future. We have to ensure that we're engaging and giving all the tools that we can to get that school population engaged and be able to connect with our business sector. And that's a critical function. It's critital, as demonstrated in the Brookings Institute findings, the Itasca's group. Our whole economic health is tied to these disparities that currently exist in our cities. If we do not correct these disparities, it will eventually contribute negatively to our business health, and that will connect negatively to our community's health. We need to correct the correct way, the way to get to some of these disparities is through investments in education, is to engaging fully our school population as it currently exists. And I believe strongly that the power of you is another tool to correct those disparities and also continue to have a workforce that is skilled for our employers that are here. And I'm convinced that this is the way that this should be, that we ought to be engaging these tools, that we need to engage our full school districts, our entire population that's there. And I know that from my perspective, but I also know it from my sister, my brother, and my son are all in St. Paul schools. And they know the critical nature of what's going on, our labor force needs, and they know what we need to be doing to engage our full population in our St. Paul school systems and kids of color. And these are the tools, the power of you, I believe strongly, is one of the ways we can do it.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Tomke.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, first of all, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to let you know how we're involved in the power of you. I'm John Tomke, and although I've been retired for 8 years, in my working career, I've served as the business manager for Electricians Local 110, president of the St. Paul Trades and Labor Assembly, and a regional vice president for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and as the chief operating officer for the Administrative Services Corporation. I have worked for over 30 years in recruiting, training, and mentoring young people. I have worked with many organizations funded by foundations and some tax dollars for trying to retain teenagers in high school and then helping train them for jobs. For the last 17 years, I've served as a member of the Board of Directors for the St. Paul College Foundation, and for the last 2 years, I have been the liaison between the foundation and the college for the Power of You program. In that capacity, I've been deeply involved with recruiting students and raising money for the program. Back in May of 06, when we were trying to get students to go to St. Paul College through the Power of You, I was working with students at Johnson High, Humboldt High, and Arlington High School. Of the dozens of students that I was working with, almost all of them told me that they were going to college, yet none of them had actually applied. There were, to the best of my recollection, only two of them that had a grade point average of greater than 2.0. Most of them were around 1.7, 1.8. Many of these students did go to St. Paul College. Some of them have dropped out, but most are still there, and they're in the 2.6, 2.8, 3.0 bracket. They have done much better in college than they did in high school. Two of the major obstacles, and we've talked about it already today, to students going to college is the financial aspect, is one. The other one is that they believe no matter how hard they try, no matter what they do, they are going to fail. And you heard a little bit of that from the three students here, and most of the students around the room, I think, would agree with that. It is that attitude that we have to attack. And the Power of You is doing exactly that by showing the students that they can succeed, that they are much smarter than they think they are. They will succeed, and it will make it easier for their siblings to follow them because that's exactly what's happening. Some of the students from Arlington High School that have gone to the Power of You now have younger brothers and sisters in high school talking about going to college. We have to get to these kids younger, but first we've got to show them that there is an opportunity for them to succeed. The Power of You program does that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee?
Where is this money coming from?
Okay. Thank you. Then you had two more people. Mike Favor.
Chair Pappas, Mike Favor, the principal Robbinsdale Cooper, is not with us today.
He's not with us. Okay.
And it's because his school is in the state tournament, basketball tournament, and as all good principals, I know that he has to be there. So he is canceled out. I would like to ask Bev Turner and Sarah Barrows to come forward. They're on your list, I believe, and they are funders of the program, and maybe talk a bit about their funding. Sarah and Bev had to leave also.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I was asked to tell you, pass a note, that the students are leaving not because of anything any of us said, because they have some classes to get back to, and they're catching their rides back. But let me close it off if I could then. First of all, thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to talk about the program today. I know you're pressed on time and the meeting has gone long, but we appreciate that you at least consider the project that we have. The three colleges tried to respond to concerns that we have throughout the state of Minnesota. First of all is that there are a disproportionate number of low-income students that are not going on to college. Second, there are a disproportionate number of students of color who are not going on to college. And we also recognize that we have some problems coming up in our workforce, that we're going to be short of workers. And we need all these people to be successful. As I listened to the comments today and reviewed in my mind things that we've done this past year in this demonstration project, I know that we could have been more successful if we would have raised the standards of the students who were coming into the college. But that was not the point of what we were doing. What we were trying to do is to hold out hope for students who are not going on to college, not getting to go on to college because of many things that they can't control or perceived barriers that they may have. And what we've done is dramatically increased the number of students of color who have come on to college, the low-income students have come on to college, and we're going to increase the number of workers who are going to be going into our workforce for our future needs. The project was sponsored by funds that we raised from the private sector.
We knew to fund this, we needed outside resources. So they generously funded this program. They believed in what we were doing. They wanted to see what the results would be also. As I said, it's a demonstration project. It is not completed. When it is completed, there may be more information, and also maybe more information that would be more of value to you. But the point of it is that we have many more students who are going on to college. We have many more students being successful that would not have been successful without the power of you. And we believe that this is an opportunity for other schools to be involved in the project. And what we are proposing in the bill is that there be pilot projects, four other pilot projects established to see what success they can have with encouraging more people of color and low-income students going on to school. So it's Minneapolis and St. Paul, but four other projects that are identified in this bill.
President Schwichtenberg, could you give our staff kind of a breakdown of what the money would be used for in the bill, in the expansion?
As I recall, it's about $4 million request that's in the bill. $2 million would be for Minneapolis and St. Paul. Most of the money would be used to pay for student tuition for going on to college. The other four pilots in there are chosen by the chancellor and or Metropolitan State University. Is actually how many dollars would be spent on the different items would be dependent on how many students that they decided to take as far as the expenditures of the money. But it's a total of $4 million for the project. And one reason that we are here concerned about the Minneapolis-St. Paul piece is this is a five-year demonstration project with three cohorts coming through. And this is our second cohort now. Our third one will be next year that we'll be accepting students later this spring, and that will be the last cohort in the five-year plan. If this was going to be expanded, it's important to be able to do it at this time because otherwise we would not be out talking about it, reaching down into the high schools like we have been doing this past year. And that's why the concern for St. Paul, Minneapolis. But again, we believe that some other system should be involved in piloting this and seeing if they can come up with success in getting more students to go on to school. One of the things that was very noticed by me was the interest of students of going on to college. 3 or 4 years ago, we had 100 people from St. Paul Public Schools that were interested in going on to the college, St. Paul College. Now, by being out in the schools and showing students that there is an opportunity to go to college, by them talking to their brothers and sisters and other students behind them in school, we have 500 applications for St. Paul College for this next year. So it has generated and sparked much more interest on the part of students. In one of the career days that I spoke to with students the teacher did a very good job, as all teachers do, and had students send me notes about thanking me for being there. But the one student that struck my attention most was a young lady who said, "Thank you very much for coming to my school to tell me about college opportunities. I now know that I, too, can go to college." And I think that's very striking because one of the problems I see is there are so many people that do not have the faith that they can go to college and that people care about them. And I think that's one of the things that has been addressed by the power of you.
Senator Pappas?
Yes, Senator Sharon.
I'd like to ask some very specific questions about I understand the concept and the value here, but I'm trying to understand on the numbers here. $2 million is for Metro State and the Tech College and St. Paul College. Then the next $2 million says $800,000 for suburban schools. Is it suburban community technical? And then, because if you said that, I missed it. I'm sorry, I was out of the room. And then $1.2 million is for rural schools.
Chair Pappas, Representative. The idea is that there would be two pilots in the metro area, the two suburban schools that would share the $800,000, and there would be two pilots in rural Minnesota that would share the $1.2 million.
Okay, but you're talking about the money is for the school. The students would come from there, and the money would go for their tuition.
Right. This is pilots in their school and not necessarily with Minneapolis or St. Paul College. It would be a college of their choice or that area's choice. It's
Thank
not,
you.
This not is for those two colleges.
Senator Pappas, there are two things that I want to make sure I understand. This is tuition only. This money is used for tuition, so those campuses need to use their other resources to wrap around the student other support services, like to facilitate them with books or money for housing or those kinds of other kinds of support services are not paid for out of this money.
But Chair Pappas, Representative, that's my understanding that the dollars will be used mostly for the tuition, but it's up to your committee and what you decide basically. But it's for four other individual schools with other colleges with their project with those dollars.
Thank you. And then
Senator Sharon.
One more question. I would just be curious to know if with the pilot project so far being narrowed in terms of the number of schools, I suppose it's still the cohort, it seems to me, is what creates some of the environment for success in the higher education system. So it'll be interesting to know if the students from the rural area or from the suburban areas choose a variety of different where they don't have that cohort, if that will create a different kind of environment or outcome.
Chair Pappas, Representative.
President Schwichtenberg.
I think there's a lot of leeway in how the other pilots would want to run their program. They would still have a cohort within their school, and it would depend on what other college they participated with. There's some leeway. I think that's important for those individuals to be able to look at what we've done and seek some assistance from us, but also to venture out and how they want to do it that would most benefit their individual communities.
Senator Sharon. So you're saying that the various high schools will determine a relationship with a higher education institution to partner with them on this program, so the choice is that you're talking about is not a broad-based choice for the power of you student to choose any university anywhere, but the choice would be within the high school to partner with a particular one or two higher education institutions?
Chair Pappas, Representative, as I recall, the bill allows the Metropolitan State University to be involved in choosing the pilots and also the Chancellor of the Minnesota State College University Systems.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, perhaps I can clarify a bit further. I don't think my colleague has the bill right in front of him, but in the section regarding suburban pilots, as President Schwichtenberg has mentioned, Metropolitan State would select one technical college and one community college or community and technical college to partner with a high school. So there would just be one destination for that high school. I'm sorry, two destinations, two schools, and in the case of the rural pilots, the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities would select two colleges, and it describes further. So the institutions, much like is the case in Minneapolis and St. Paul, the institutions that would be the destination institutions, colleges, would be set under this language.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you have $2 million for the current program, what does that serve a year, about 2,000 students then? Is that about what you have now?
Madam Chair,
President Davis.
Senator Roebling, using that $1,100 on average per student, you're correct. We have right now we have about just over 600 students in the program.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
When you go and look for other sites in other communities, I know a lot of the money is currently being raised or given to you by foundations that has helped with your programs so far. Would you be looking for benefactors for those new sites too, or would this money replace those contributions?
Madam Chair,
and Davis.
Senator Roebling, I presume that our colleagues are always looking for opportunities to raise private funds to support their students, and they would continue to do so even if this program were in place. if I'm answering your question.
Mr. Manager. Because I'm wondering if you know, by coming to us, because you did this all without us at first, that you feel that some of those sources have dried up, and even if you can prove to your benefactors that this has been a beneficial program, that they won't continue to fund it. I'm wondering about their, I know they've only made a 5-year commitment, but was there hope that any of them would re-up?
If I might,
President Davis, and then President Schuchten.
Senator Pappas, Senator Roebling, as we've said, this has been presented to our funders as a demonstration project that responds to the business community's report and the report by the Citizens League. I think at least one major funder has said to us, one corporate funder, we expect public policy will change, that the government won't do business as usual. You'll reallocate your college funds, for example, to provide support, which we've done. And you'll think differently about how to make these inroads with these groups using public funds that are available for grants. So that's what we're doing. We're here to say their opportunity to think differently about the way we're doing business and get a different result. And we're proving, we believe, that we're getting that kind of result that's been called for. We're going to continue to fundraise for our students because even with these grants, we still have, as you can see, a great many support service needs that to provide for these students and for all the other students who attend our institutions.
And President Schwichtenberg.
Chair Pappas, Representative, we have talked with a number of our funders, and they originally funded us to help the students, and they believe that a demonstration project would show that these students have value and that we need to have be reaching down and pulling more students into the college. We can't afford to leave any behind. But I'd say over half of them have said we will support the funding for this time to have you have a demonstration project, but we would expect to have you seek out funding from the legislature or the college system beyond that. I do believe that, especially being that the House and the Senate has even been willing to hear the bill, that some of the funders will be available to provide us some more funds, but not at the level that we've been getting. Their main intent was to support us in a demonstration project.
And the funders you had to leave, Bev Turner from the Travelers Companies, and who was the other person? Sarah Barrels?
Sarah Barrel from the Perlman Family Foundation.
From the Perlman Family Foundation. Okay. So they've been some of your funders. Before we wrap up with the bill, there was someone else from the audience who wanted to testify, but did she? Oh, there she is. Why don't you come forward? And we'll give you a few minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate you letting me coming to come up here. My name is Noelani Blanche, and I am a student at Metropolitan State University, Power of You student. I am also a peer leader for the student services, and I am also a insurance service representative for Wells Fargo. I work 44 hours a week, and I attend school full-time because that is a requirement. And it is very, very, very difficult to have very good time management skills and to do well in school. But the thing that has kept my head above water is the support system. Christine Ramos and Bo, she was our interim coordinator when she was on her maternity. The support and the encouragement and the upliftment has made me capable of doing what I do. And I just want to say that the Power of You made it possible for me to go to college, that both of my parents dropped out of high school. They later received their GEDs. They were very honest with me from day one that if I wanted to be successful, if I wanted to go to college, I would have to earn it. And the Power of You was the outlet. I did graduate with honors, but I also worked in college. In high school. And it was very hard for me to have time to fill out the scholarship forms and write the essays and everything like that. So the Power of You was that hope. And I just want to say that the baby boomers right now are retiring, and we need a great demand for professionals for our economy. And if we don't have those, so many things could happen that it's unexplainable. And it's very, very, very important for our children to go to college and become professionals. And the power of you encourages us to do that, and it makes it possible. Like some of my peers have said earlier, they may not have done so well in high school, but once they went into college and they had professors that actually care about them and that don't judge them when they walk in the door, and they really invest their time, their energy, and their motivation for them to do well, it's encouraging, and it makes it possible for them to do well now. That's why there's an increase of their grade from college to high school, and that's one of the problems in high school for kids. They have a mentality, it's that culture. No, I can't go to college, that's not me. And the reason for that is because they're constantly underestimated. They don't have that encouragement in their self. They don't power of you needs to say, and there's a lot of things that need to be improved. I will say that. But that's with everything. When it first starts out, it needs to be improved. And I really mean this from my heart. Power of you really does need to stay, because if our economy does not get better, and if there are not more professionals out here, there will be no doctors, there will be no senators, none of you guys will be here. I mean.
Ms. Blanche, take a breath. What high school did you go to?
South High School in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, right. When did you graduate?
07.
In 07.
Yes.
So wasn't admission possible on your campus? You don't remember
for,
hearing
for Metro
about
State it. University?
No, at your high school.
Was admission possible?
Admission possible, right.
Yes.
Are they not at North? You said you went to North?
No, I said I was at South High School.
Not at South?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out why you in high school, there wasn't anyone there to help you fill out the college applications forms, because obviously you said you did well in high school and you were on a college track.
It wasn't necessarily just the resources. It was the fact that I was limited in time, and I had already overextended myself because I had to fully support myself. Right now, I fully support myself. I live on my own, and my family would help me if they could, but they're not capable.
So you weren't available to be involved in any other activities.
I mean, I was in the career services when I was available, mm-hmm. but to fill out FAFSA, to fill out college applications, and then fill out scholarship applications and do a good job, because if you don't do a good job, you're not going to get the scholarship.
Okay.
So.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your comments.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Senator Roblin.
I was looking at Section 4 here and trying to figure out where this $4 million is coming from.
This $4 million is coming from the $15 million generated by the Pell Grant changes on the federal level. So it's coming out of financial aid.
Well, Madam Chair, I thought that we only had like 1.6 of that on the bottom line after we did the other changes.
Right. Senator Roebling, let's go through the whole series here. So, okay, here's the situation is we have a deficit. This is a non-budget year. In our budget bill, we discontinued a new scholarship program, which is popular with at least one member of this committee and other people in this building. However, that project actually was never demonstrated with private money. It wasn't piloted with private money, which is something that would have been nice if we'd had some better data on that. We're talking about the ACHIEVE, obviously, scholarship program. And Senator Roebling brings up an important issue, is that the proposal here is to fund this with out of a surplus that was generated in the state grant program, which we've never really funded a program. We fund financial aid out of the state grant. The reason why I had this hearing, other than I personally wanted to get a broader understanding of the power of you, and it's always wonderful to have students come in and talk, is because it's in play. It'll be in play in the conference committee because it's in the House bill. And so I wanted us to be able to have some kind of an understanding or a position or something that we could take to conference committee. And so Mr. Fuller did do a delete-all amendment, the A3 amendment, to clean up some of the language, and Dr. Weidman has some additional changes. And I would just like to put this on the bill so that at least we have it in kind of a form that we could bring to a discussion should we get to that. So Dr. Weidman, do you want to talk about your language? Does everyone have the A3 amendment? Okay.
Madam Chair, members, the changes I'm proposing would be in Section 1, Subdivision 2. And it's basically just to clarify
money would be used just to cover tuition and fees, because there's language in there that talks about cost of attendance and that sort of implies living expenses as well. So what I would suggest is on page 1, line, I believe everything after the word two, first two, and insert pay the amount remaining after deducting the student's Pell Grant Award and State Grant Award from the institution's tuition and mandatory fee charges. And then on line 11, delete everything before the word four.
Do you want to say that one more time? Just the new language. Pay the amount remaining after.
Pay the amount remaining after deducting the student's Pell Grant Award and State Grant Award from the institution's tuition and mandatory fee charges.
Okay. Does everyone hear the amendment? Someone want to offer it? Senator Lynch offers the amendment to the A3 delete all amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. And did you have anything else? Okay, Mr. Fuller had some language on 220. This is it. Okay, on 220 after section, insert must be used solely for scholarship grants and. Must be used solely for scholarship grants and on 220. Would someone offer that for me? Senator Tomassoni moves that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay. Motion prevails. So what we have here and what I wanted to make clear is that the state money can only be used for financial aid, for scholarships. I think it's not perfect, because it still is restricted to a certain group of students. But when you look at our financial aid programs, there are some students who benefit more than others with different things that we do. I mean, LME helps all students, but changing the student share, the family responsibility, you know, some of those help private college students more, and some help part-time students more. And so there is some differentiation. I have to say that I'm still a little uncomfortable with. I wish we had new money to do this with, but we all know that we're cutting. We've cut both the MNSCU and the U of M budget, and it's a non-new program budget year. But I think that momentum is also an important thing, and that in this program, it'll help. I think it'll help them raise the extra money to finish the pilot. It'll. I think we've seen positive enough results after the first year, although there's certainly a lot of room for improvement. And we know that there's a tremendous need in the workforce and the tremendous importance of educating all of our students. And all of our students who think about going to college, and I think when you mostly they do say, I want to go to college, they just don't know that you have to get good grades. You have to study. You have to take rigorous courses. You have to be prepared for college. And it's really important, right, Mr. Broderick, that we get that word out. Senator Sharon.
This is just an informational question that maybe you can answer for me, Senator Pappas. Under the Pell Grant or the state grants, are books allowed under the Pell Grant, textbooks? Can they use those grant dollars for textbooks? And would be, if it's
Senator
true.
Sharon, I believe they can spend that however they want to spend it. I'm not.
It's figured in.
Pardon? As long as it exceeds the cost of tuition. Otherwise, it goes to tuition first.
So.
Yeah. We're thinking it goes to tuition first, but then if there's money above that, then they spend it on books or living expenses.
The reason I'm asking is, if we're excluding that, if we do, are we intentional about that? Excluding the option, the need for resources for books with this language. And if that is true, do we want to do that?
That would increase the cost quite a bit, though.
think.
It might be, you know, we're talking about, it may take a lot of money to include to include books, so we may want to be intentional.
Parallel the current financial aid program as much as possible and not, you know, carve out too many exceptions.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to just leave that
but
be.
They can use their financial aid money to pay for books, though, currently. So I don't know that we've excluded that. Just for tuition. Okay.
And this is saying you have to do the same program.
But this is just with the Power of You money. Right. So the Power of You money could only be used on tuition, mm-hmm. but their Pell Grant and their state grant could be used for books. Right? if we need to talk about that some more, okay. We can clarify that because this bill isn't going anywhere. Okay, I'd just like to put on the amendment, and if Senator Sharon would maybe move the A3 amendment to 3490, thank you, as amended. Before we do that, Senator Roebling?
Madam Chair, so since our finance bill already left the committee, is this going to end up as an amendment tomorrow in the finance committee, or what is the plan?
No. No, this will just be the Senate committee's work to take to conference committee, should this be in play in conference committee.
Okay, so this would be my opportunity to object to using this PAL money for this purpose.
Right.
Because, and I'm assuming that the federal dollars are free for us to use for whatever student financial aid we choose. I don't know for sure that that's true, but we are assuming that apparently. But traditionally and historically, we have always used it for students that can prove financial need. And this program does not require that students prove that necessarily, as long as they have graduated from a Minneapolis or St. Paul school. Do they also have to be eligible for the Pell Grant? Is that part of it?
I think they do. Ms. Schultz, in your research, is she still here? Well, maybe I'll have to ask then the presidents. Don't your students have to be Pell Grant eligible to be in the Power of You?
I don't think so.
You just have to want to go to college, I thought they said.
Okay. Madam Chair.
President Davis.
Students have to apply for federal financial aid. The cap on family income is the same cap as in the ACHIEVE program.
$150,000?
No, I believe it's just a gross income of
$75,000. Right. And do you know from, was there data in the report, because I didn't look at that part of the report, that indicated how many students were not eligible for a Pell? I think you're still eligible for a state grant up to $75,000.
Madam Chair, I can't say what was in the Wilder report. We do know that in the first year, the average household income of our students, I'm sorry, the median household income of our students was under $30,000.
So it's possible that you had a few students with household income of $75,000, but you had a lot more below.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we made an adjustment in this coming year to ensure that we didn't have students whose household income would be higher than the $75,000 adjusted gross income, much like the ACHIEVE program.
Okay, Senator Roebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, because, I know that the ACHIEVE program, it doesn't have actually, the state grant is lower than $75,000, I believe. You can apply for financial aid. I've been through all this with my kids. And at that level, you would certainly maybe qualify for a subsidized loan. Depends which college you're going to and what the tuition was and how many kids you had in your family and how many were in college, and there's so many factors. But but anyway, I have some concerns that one, they don't necessarily have to be low income, and two, they don't have to do anything to earn it. you know, at least with Achieve, we were requiring them to successfully complete. I think we had a B grade point average that they needed to have, or at least a C, to complete courses that would prepare them for college, and then they could get college scholarship money. But this is kind of a turn for our Pell Grant money, and I don't know if. And it's very targeted, and I suspect that if this would go through, we would then take money. We would probably remove the things that we did to reduce the family and student share on the state grant, and I really don't want to do that, because that is targeted for kids who absolutely have shown financial need, and a lot of them, most of them, won't be eligible for this. Because this is a very targeted group of a couple thousand students, and so you know it's not spread around the state, and I, you know, it definitely is an advantage to a small group, and so I mean, not that they don't need it, but I just am saying that I know we don't have any other sources of money, but I don't think this is really the source we should be using right now.
Madam Chair,
I think the intention is to spread it on the state. I mean, that's what this, I think, the bill is attempting to take what's been learned from the Power of You through with private money and expand it to continue that program in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but also have a suburban pilot and a rural pilot. And, you know, I guess I have to speak for the House author, Representative Carlson, who has wanted for, you know, many decades he's been in public office, that we should have the first year of college should be free for all kids. And we can't afford that. And there are many families that can afford to pay for their own college. So this is kind of a new twist on, at least let's get the kids who can't afford to go to college or have other barriers, you know, who don't know that there are financial aid programs out there, who don't have the self-esteem, who don't have the family or school support to even fill out the financial aid applications. That's why I asked that young lady, Ms. Blanche, about Admission Possible, another private organization that's gotten a little bit of money from the Office of Higher Education. But they're going into schools and trying to work with kids like her and like Mr. Jones and Ms. McConnell, who are good students, but they just can't find their way to college. And that's disgusting. For you know, we're worried about the students who don't do well, but certainly the students who do well in high school, that should be a given, that we make it so complicated for them to find their way. So I really see the advantage of having this kind of huge support group of all the other students who are in the Power of You and all these people who are, you know, cheering for you to be successful. But I agree with you, Senator Roebling. You know, I told you my doubts. It's why this is not in the division's recommendations, but I do think it's probably going to be in play in conference committee, and I really wanted the Senate committee to have a good discussion on it. So, Senator Lantz.
I'm trying to sort out some of the flows of money here, but I understand the Pell Grant money coming from the federal government, that's not what would be passed through this, is it? The Pell Grant money, in effect, displaces additional money that's already in the student grant programs, which would otherwise go unused, or and so there's that surplus that you talked about.
Mr. Albrecht, do you want to just address that?
Madam Chair and members, that's correct. We're referring to it as the Pell Grant surplus money, but it's really made available in the state grant program by changes in the federal Pell Grant money. The Pell Grant money itself goes to students. It doesn't come to the state.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Albrecht, so the Pell Grant money comes in, and it goes back out to students, essentially supplanting other money that's in the state grant program. So if we were to try to disperse the other money that's in the state grant program that isn't already demanded or accounted for in our current structures, we'd have to change formulas?
That's correct, Senator Latz, and that's what the we did in the bill that we passed to the Finance Committee on Tuesday.
Okay, so the full Pell Grant surplus is accounted for in the bill that we already passed by changing the formula to be able to make that money available, changing the need-based formula, whatever, so that it will be used.
And that's correct, Senator.
And then what the House has done is they've made different changes in that formula so that there's still an additional $4 million of surplus unallocated,
right,
or unspoken for, and so that they can carve out that much to go into this. Is that what we're doing?
Right.
That's correct, Senator.
You know, we can certainly try to make the case in conference committee that if this program was going to be funded, it should be funded with general fund money. But we know how little general fund money there is.
Well, I would agree. I think in the perfect world, that's where it should come from. But I'm comfortable carving this out for this particular purpose, given the constraints we're under.
Then Senator Latz, do you want to move the A3 amendment? Senator Latz moves the A3 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.